best part about it is that we're getting to be in the presence and stand in the presence of American patriots. You know, I'm reminded this morning of words that speak to the American soul. Words spoken by Thomas Jefferson, who said, "A little rebellion now and then is a good thing." My friends, our country is in peril. Our debt's at a record amount, our economy. And this economic recovery is absolutely stagnant. Our place in the world is weakened. So I have a simple solution. It's time for a little rebellion on the battlefield of ideas. But instead of looking to Washington to find the front lines of the battle, I ask you to look to the states, where we find the laboratories of innovation and 50 different experiments in democracy taking place. Now, among the states, we see two visions for America. There's the vision common in blue states, where the state plays an increasing role in the lives of its citizens. In these states, taxes are on the rise, pension programs are out of control, and jobs are leaving by the truckloads. And then there's the vision common to American red America, if you will. The red state America vision, where the freedom of the individual comes first. The reach of government is limited. In these states, taxes are low. Spending's under control. Jobs are on the rise. And opportunity is being sought far and wide.
I came today to reinforce Governor Rick Perry's speech from yesterday, where Rick said, it's time for a little rebellion on the battlefield of ideas. I want to suggest to you that actually it's time for a big rebellion on the battlefield of ideas.
Here. I think we need a rebellion. We need to rebel against the status quo. Status quo has given us $17 trillion in debt. And frankly, that's been a little bit from both parties. So we do need an uprising.
You are here today at CPAC because you understand the stakes in this country have never been higher. You are here because you understand our country is at a crisis point. We are at the edge of a cliff. Liberty is under assault. And what I want to talk to you all about this morning is how we win. There are a lot of D.C. consultants that say there's a choice for Republicans to make. We can either choose to keep our head down, to not rock the boat, to not stand for anything, or we can stand for principle. And they say if you stand for principle, you lose elections. The way to do it, the smart way, the Washington way, is don't stand against Obamacare. Don't stand against the debt ceiling. Don't stand against nothing. I want to tell you something. That is a false dichotomy. You want to lose elections? Stand for nothing. Look at the last four congressional elections, 06, 08, 10, and 12. Three of the four, we followed that strategy. 06, 08, and 12, we put our head down, we stood for nothing, and we got walloped. The one election that was a tremendous election was 2010 when Republicans drew a line in the sand. We said we stand unequivocally against Obamacare, against bankrupting the country, and we won an historic tidal wave of an election. And then, of course, all of us remember President Dole and President McCain and President Romney. Now, look, those are good men. They're decent men. But when you don't stand and draw a clear distinction, when you don't stand for principle,
as far as the Tea Party and others are concerned, it's anybody to the left of Ted Cruz is a rhino, a Republican in name only, which, as I say, is an insult. But you know what? The real rhinos are the people in the Tea Party and on the hard right, because they have made it clear over and over again that their allegiance is not to the Republican Party.
Unfortunately, we had three or four dozen Republicans in the House, who are Cruz Republicans, who basically threatened to bring the House down if John Boehner did not pursue this policy. John knew it was not going to work, but he probably had no choice. I understand his position. But I'm really more concerned about why more Republicans around the country didn't join me in denouncing Ted Cruz. I mean, now we have people who are on the sidelines who are coming forward, but we have to take a stand here. We cannot allow our party to be taken over by the likes of Ted Cruz and Rand Paul. I mean, these are people isolationists.
The best thing conservatives can do is, well, nothing. That is, that our strategy should be simply to sit on our hands, to keep our heads down, and let President Obama's failures preserve a Republican majority in the House and win one in the Senate. But I'm here to tell you that conventional wisdom in Washington, as usual, is dead wrong. That council is unworthy of the party of Lincoln and Reagan, and it's unequal to the task before us. President Obama and the Democrats have done everything they can to deserve defeat. But the Republican Party has not yet done what it must do to deserve victory. We've not yet... Thank you. We've not yet won back the trust of the American people or explained exactly why they should give it to us. 2014 must be the year we change that. Most of the speakers you'll hear this week will come to inspire you, or flatter you, or claim solidarity with you. I've come to challenge you. The work remaining before us this year and for the next 3 years is the most important work conservatives have faced in a generation. It is the work of redefining our movement, of redefining and rebuilding our party, and rescuing our nation. That work will not be easy or fun or glamorous. Most of it won't even be noticed, but it is essential to our success. If conservatives do not do this work, we will lose. We'll lose in 2014 and in 2016 and beyond. We will lose, and we will deserve to lose. And whether the people at this podium are willing to do that work depends on whether the people in this audience and conservatives in communities around the country demand it. The last time conservatives faced this challenge was 37 years ago at the fourth annual CPAC conference. It was February 1977. And that winter, Ronald Reagan and his conservatives were being attacked by the Washington Republican establishment for challenging President Ford in the 1976 primaries. They were being blamed for handing a victory to Jimmy Carter and other Democrats. But Reagan knew that it was the party establishment that had lost that election by losing touch and losing credibility. He knew that the future of the GOP was not the old party of Republican insiders. It was a new party of conservative ideas. And so Ronald Reagan came to CPAC, and he called for a new Republican Party, a party of principles and confidence and a positive agenda for change.
Republicans can do something about this, but not if we try to be all things to all people. There are some in our midst who've suggested that we should broaden our base, except that what they mean by broadening our base is to blur the image, to make us indistinguishable from the other party. Some have suggested that the 1974 election, the disastrous results, were an indictment of what we stand for. Well, may I suggest that the meaning of the last election will not be found among those who voted. It will be found by polling those who stayed home, the biggest non-voter bloc in our nation's history. And why did they stay home? Well, because they said they couldn't see any difference between the two parties. I think they're basically wrong, but I think this is also an indication of what our answer should be to those who would make us more like the opponents. I am a convert to Republicanism. I spent most of my adult life as a Democrat, and I can testify that when I found I could no longer follow the leadership of the Democratic Party, I became a Republican not because the parties were the same, but precisely because they were different. More than half of those who didn't vote have been polled and say it no longer makes any difference which party wins. Now some have taken another course. There are some among us, and I respect their views, who suggest that that means an end to the Republican Party, that we should form a new third party. May I suggest an alternative to that? Let's have a new first party, a Republican Party raising a banner of bold colors, no pale pastels, a banner instantly recognizable as standing for certain values which will not...
Imagine with me for a moment. Imagine a time when liberty is again spread from coast to coast. Imagine a time when our great country is again governed by the Constitution. Imagine a time when the White House is once again occupied by a friend of liberty. And you may think I'm talking about electing Republicans. I'm not. I'm talking about electing lovers of liberty. It isn't good enough to pick the lesser of two evils. We must elect men and women of principle and conviction and action who will lead us back to greatness. There is a great and tumultuous battle underway for the future, not of the Republican Party, but the future of the entire country. The question is, will we be bold and proclaim our message with passion, or will we be sunshine patriots retreating under adverse fire? Will we be firm in our convictions, or will we cower, defeated, and meekly dilute our message? Will we water down the Bill of Rights, or will we be all on fire?
He dominated one more time.
Don't let the big consultants, the big money men, and the big bad media scare you off.
When somebody's going to hold Republicans in Congress accountable, it's going to be Sarah Palin.
Hey, talk about rebranding the GOP instead of restoring the trust of the American people. How about rebuilding the middle class?
Now is the time to furlough the consultants
and tune out the pollsters and the focus groups home and toss the political script.
She does things differently. She plays by her own rules.
Time for we the people to break up the cronyism. And that goes for finding candidates, looking to our communities, our PTAs, our service clubs, small businesses, Tea Party rallies, and City Hall. For people who are willing to lead.
She's building the future, saying to the old dogs, your time is absolutely
she
up.
She doesn't care about the old dogs in the party at all.
We deserve better than the people who call themselves our leaders. But we won't get it unless we're ready to fight. And this is one fight that is worth it.
The power of Palin.
The bottom line is still, she has clout.
So you are trying to mobilize to get involved, either run themselves or support candidates they like. And she says the work isn't done yet.
The next election is 20 months away. The last thing we need is Washington, D.C. vetting our candidates.
I would not be in the U.S. Senate today if it were not for Governor Sarah Palin.
And Mike Lee and Paul and Gowdy and Gosar and Gomer, etc. We've got some good guys in there. Good guys who, they're good guys. They carry the common sense gene, right? The common sense gene. And they know that we are a nation with a government, not the other way around. They're constitutionalists. And they were sent to D.C. to fight the battle there for us. So it's time. It's time that we send them reinforcements. They need their reinforcements because, you see, families are hurting today. Hard workers. Hard-working families, they're caught between the crony capitalism that benefits the politically connected and the income redistribution that benefits the politically favored. But still, I feel good about America because conservatives haven't forgotten the America beyond the ruling class's wealthy D.C. suburbs. I'm talking the places where most of the people who do the working and the serving and the building and the tax paying live. That's where you'll find amazing America. We're staying true to our principles. The real solutions to real problems, and you got to hear some of those solutions the last couple of days. And you're not just sitting back, just hanging with the Chum Gang. I hope you're not. Just letting D.C. control the people and bankrupt our country in order to fundamentally transform it. No, that's why I feel good, because you're not just putting up with this. We do have some great pro-freedom, free market, pro-family, bitter clingers and wingers, a.k.a. great leaders there. And they're proposing ways to actually help the middle class and allow equal opportunity to work. And then through self-initiative, let everyone be lifted and succeed. That's why I feel good. And because I hear from you, and I see you, I just feel that we know we've got each other's back, and I feel that you know that this is the stirring of a great awakening. I do believe that the eyes of America are open. Unfortunately, though, some would want you to just hit the snooze button and roll back over, like, hush, America, go back to sleep, little lamb. Go back to sleep. Close those eyes. Some of these folks are in the GOP establishment. And they are a different breed of cat. They say that the smartest thing that we can do right now is just lay low, stay out of the way while, say, Obamacare crashes and burns on its own. And the economy sputters to a halt. Well, forget that solvency and sovereignty stuff. Just lay low. And while internationally we so tick off our allies and we lead a world that is looking for that shining city on a hill again, we lead them from behind. The result is some very, very, very bad dudes gain ground. This, instead of putting the fear of God in our enemies, well, proving peace through strength. And that is only brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue. That's only what the United States military can do. But some GOP experts, they subscribe to the old saying, you know, don't interrupt while they're in the process of destroying themselves. Maybe true, but you do interrupt when they are in the process of destroying your country. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to stop them, 2014. We're going to stop them. And by the way, you complacent ones who had just shined the boot that would stomp on our neck working the statist agenda of Obama's, this applies to you too in the 2016 presidential. Their agenda, it's failure and fiasco on steroids. So America is counting on the GOP to get it right. And that's why the establishment can't blow it. No Republican gets elected promising higher taxes, wasteful spending, increased debt, bigger government, rewarding lawbreakers via amnesty? No. So why are they voting for these things now? And why reward them with your vote? GOP Beltway Boys. Yeah, GOP Beltway voice. You know that 2010 election victory that swept you into power? You didn't build that. The Tea Party did. Dance with the one that brought you, and you want another sweep? Then grab a broom and join us at the party. Yes, in this awakening, eyes are open, we're stronger now, we're wiser now, and God knows we are hungry, and there aren't enough low-information voters in the country to save the other side this year.
If
friends,
we don't
last year, I stood here and I declared that we're not here to rebrand a party. We're here to rebuild a country. And what I meant was we shouldn't be in the business of just using the right poll-tested phraseology or pander to the right special interests. No, we're in the business of digging ourselves out of debt and restoring competitiveness, educating our children, and liberating our potential. Truth be told, I think it's from coming from a very diverse family and having a diverse career and being independent. I don't care what you call yourself or how you rebrand a party. If you stand for those right things, I stand with you. And to stand here is to stand on the shoulders of giants, the men and women who've come before at podiums like this, in front of patriots like you. You're the key. You are what matters in all of this. But they, coming before, devoting their lives to preserving and protecting what is best in us. Some were veterans, some politicians, some housewives, speaking to soldiers, students, and teachers, and firemen, fishermen, farmers of every race, color, and creed. All were part of a remarkable movement of freedom and human flourishing. And for all that they have given us, all they achieved, such a great price they paid. In their honor, work hard and feel good, knowing that the best is yet to come. This is a great awakening. The age of Obama is almost over. The end of an era. He is the lamest of lame ducks. So expand our ranks. We can do this. Expand our ranks to save our country, because our sensible, imperative mission for small government and big freedom is big enough for every American who loves liberty and trusts the individual. And I know this because we know America, not from the top down, but from the heart looking out. And our message resonates. We believe in the promise of America. That message does resonate, and it has been since a band of brothers dumped tea in the Boston Harbor. We have got to be that band of brothers and sisters again, not to fundamentally transform America, but to save it and to fundamentally restore the promise of America. And it is because of you. It's we the people, because of you, that I have never been more optimistic about the future of our one nation under God. So stand up and stiffen your spine. You gotta fight for it. The best is yet to come. God bless you, CPAC. God bless you, conservatives. God bless America.
Tonight to become, we're the
If you want to see the end of an error, you have to end the reign of the rhinos and stand and fight like you mean it, dream warriors. As the winds of rhinoism blow through the halls of CPAC, there is a counterwave of authentic conservatives who love liberty and believe the Constitution is the law and that it binds the men in government by its chains. But it is not self-enforcing. It takes the individuals in our civil society to enforce it. That means you. You and all the grassroots activists who love liberty are tasked with waking up the disinterested, dejected, uninformed, missing American masses. Rhino conmen speak hawkishly against Russia's action in the Crimea, not as a principled foreign policy statement, but as merely a political weapon with no regard for security and American interests. At the same time, POTUS and his Democrat minions tuck their tails and run because they're cowards. Obama likes to speak loudly, but he carries a limp stick. And you can put lipstick on a limp stick, it's still a limp stick. This invites aggression from men like Putin. No surprise there. Whether incompetence or complicity, this is the disaster we get when we elect a quasi-Marxist, corporatist, meat puppet, community organizer who throws a ball like a girl as commander-in-chief. Yet Obama, he's not the only problem. The more pressing problem is a Congress populated by a captured interest, the GOP establishment ensnared by neocon jingoists who love war and debt. CPAC is a microcosm of the 2014 political battle. As rhino cowards and neocon conmen feign conservatism, the real conservatives make a bold statement of not merely criticizing Democrats, whose policies the rhinos share anyway, but putting forward a positive case for the conservative cause for liberty. A powerful message, a winning message, and a good message that will be quickly quashed by the consultant lobbyist establishment complex and their propaganda arms like Fox Noise. It's up to you to carry the torch of liberty and light up the disinterested, distracted, dejected Americans so that a tsunami of conservative liberty lovers drowns out the cowards, conmen, and Crimea distraction. You have a choice. You can work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives and real libertarians take over the GOP, or watch the statists in both parties push their corporatist agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a surveillance state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their Keynesian masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with the real conservatives to defeat the lawless hordes of cultural Marxists, statists, collectivists, oligarchs, useful idiots and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrats. First, you must crush the rhinos for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex Rhino Hunter, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City. Doctor?
Doctor, and I'm your co-host, Trog, coming to you from deep in a cave in Crimea. We didn't have to play the song. Hey, you know, that was the first time I heard Sarah. I have not listened to all the speeches. I am remiss. Sorry about that. That was awesome. I mean, she had just zinger after zinger after zinger of very key critical things that are plaguing this party, not the country. The country is what it is. You know, you got the left, and you got socialists, and you got the communists, and you got the Marxists who think they can keep printing and borrowing money and pay people not to work and leave our borders wide open and invade sovereign countries and use, you know, pay NGOs $5 billion to topple countries like the Ukraine and call it a revolution of the people. You know, it just, there's insanity everywhere, and there always has and there always will be. You know, whenever there's power and money and military might, crazy people will abuse it. And here's the thing I think that, and this is probably our reoccurring theme, is that if you think Republicans are any better, then you got the your head in the damn sand. And you need to wake up, because when you look at the amount of attacks that have occurred, and it's really funny because they don't seem to attack Mike Lee yet. You know, Mike is a really gentle-spirited man. He's very articulate, but he's got the same message, you know, that Cruz and Rand and the rest of them do, you know, about, you know, rule of law and liberty and, you know, all those wonderful things. But they're not attacking him yet, so obviously they're not worried about him yet. But I find it interesting, you know, I used to have this mentor in my life who used to say, if you want to know who I am, look at who my enemies are. Not my friends, my enemies. And the reason is because you look at the people that are attacking, you know, whether it be Rand or Cruz or whatever, or Palin, you know, you will find that it's not, in fact, really, I don't think the Democrats attack them that much because the frickin' rhino neocon Republicans attack them. Why in the hell should the Democrats waste any political capital or money attacking true conservatives, constitutionally minded people who give a crap about our country and the rule of law and sound money, you know, if your own party is attacking them? Why waste your time and money? You get it for free, you know. And so Rand speaks and he wins, which is not surprising considering a Paul have, you know, regardless of a son or a father, have won CPAC 5 out of 6 times. But then you look at who comes out of the woodwork attacking him. And you know, like King, which is just like a circus clown. Any of them, you know, they're just, these people are insane. They live in fear. And this is what I think that it's hard, sometimes it's hard to articulate this. But they are losing. They're in fear. First of all, under the Bush era, for 6 years of House, Senate, and presidency, they acted like a bunch of psychomatic Democrats and socialists and warmongers, neocons, and blew up the world, raised the debt ceiling 5 times, put us in debt, launched in a war on something that nobody could define, you know, and crippled our country, and handed the country over to some socialists and communists and gave them the House and the Senate, full majority for 2 years, and we're still paying the price for that. Then, like Sarah said, and I love that, she said in 2010, you didn't build that, we did, the Tea Party, you know, which she was a very, very, very instrumental part. And I know Paul was too, and I knew no Newt was involved, and there were several people. Everybody's got their, you know, their favorite, whatever the case may be. But Sarah was all over the map, all over the country. She was a major spokesperson, riled this country up, and handed the Republicans a victory. First of all, there was 2 issues. One was the Senate had a supermajority. They didn't even have to worry about cloture. Okay, I mean they just could have done anything they wanted. So they won some seats back there, but they won back the majority in the House. Here's the problem. The Tea Party relaxed their guard thinking, oh, you know, they're going to love us now. We just gave them a success and put a major wedge against what the socialists want to do to our country, or the commies, depending on who you're talking about. And now we can relax. Well, that was the mistake of a frickin' lifetime, because they forgot the Republican Party is full of a bunch of frickin' Democrat, light, neocon, you know, socialist, world order, big government, you know, psychos, just like the Democrat Party is. And they're, most of them are in leadership positions. So everybody relaxed and thought, oh, good, we thwarted this. Look at every major vote that has occurred that impacts our country in a major way, whether it be debt ceilings, tax increases, you know, stimulus packages, all this bull crap. you know, that has come down the pike, that's been both parties have voted that in. Now, there are people who have fought it, but, you know, it's hard to fight when you're the minority. And so I think that Sarah really nailed it when she said, we've got to send in reinforcements. And I like what Rand said in his early part of his speech. You think I'm talking about Republicans? I'm not. I'm talking about people who give a crap about the United States of America and what it stands for and what the core principles are and what the Bill of Rights is and sound money. And you know, I don't know if we should do a whole show on the world empire and the whole concept, you know, behind the difference between being a strong country like, you know, and it just pisses me off so much, Rex, when these guys quote Reagan, you know, that want to go out and blow shit up and get us into World War IV with Putin and all over a country that's like half or more of it is Russians anyway. It's none of our frickin' business. We should never have played in that area. Screwing around, you know, poking the bear in his own backyard. These people quoting Reagan piss me the hell off, because Reagan, you know, was dealing with the Cold War. He was dealing with communism, not Russia as it is today. There were some real issues going on. If you look at a frickin' map of the USSR, you know, back then compared to what it is now, it was a whole different map. There was some serious stuff going on. And what we're dealing with now is some psycho neocon economic games, you know, it's just insanity what's going on over there. And most people don't even have a clue where the Ukraine is at or Crimea. You know, what's a Crimea? I don't know. It's a song, isn't it? Cry Me a River. But
yeah, Ella Fitzgerald.
But when you look at the situations across our country and people quote Reagan as some kind of defense for their neocon, want to get us in a frickin' war, toppling other countries, using NGOs, which are, they call them non-government organizations, which is sheer bullcrap because they're all funded by your government anyway, to go in and disrupt sovereign nations and screw with their elections and, you know, and all, things that we would never put up with, you know, in this country, and we would go psycho mad, you know, if a French senator showed up at a Occupy Wall Street. Come on, people, wake up. God, it's just so frustrating to me some days. But anyway, here we are at a pinnacle point. Now, I have no freaking idea, because I haven't had time to get into it, why in the hell Cornyn won in Texas, because he's another, you know, 65% conservative rating, which is like saying he's a Democrat. You know, he's voted right along the party lines with Boehner and the rest of them. And it's frustrating to me, because 2010 was a success unless, I think it was 0.9 or 0.8% increase in voting turnout. It wasn't some, oh, well, we got 15% more people to vote. It was some ridiculous, it was a lower than a percentage vote turnout of a bunch of pissed off Americans who wanted to, you know, block a socialist, commie, Marxist, whatever the heck you want to call it, from destroying our country. And so here we are, and we've been talking about 2014 since the primary got over, because we started laying that foundation for this message, trying to get people to understand that midterms are vital. And for some reason, you know, most Americans think we have elections every 4 years, because the statistical numbers between midterms and presidential years is a big number, you know, 15-20% difference. And that's stupid, because they're just as important, if not more important. And I'll tell you who knows this. The Democrats know it, because their machine runs 24/7, 365 days a year. The Republican machine warms up 6 months before an election. That's one of the major issues in the whole political battle out there. But they also know that they want the damn House back, and they want a supermajority of the Senate so they don't have to argue with Republicans on every issue. So the question is, and it's always the question, what are you going to do to not allow rhino neocon warmongering psychotic Republicans and commie Marxist Democrats from winning this year? Because, you know, if you're standing around waiting for 2016, you got a screw loose, because it's 2014. And in 2 years, if you want to know what this guy could do in 2 years, look at the first 2 years. Look at Obamacare. Look at the bailout. You know, my great-grandkids would be paying for that damn bailout. And that doesn't even include the money they've been printing nonstop since then. You know, the Fed's going to have a $5 trillion balance sheet on U.S. debt by the end of this year. And we're going to probably be, I would imagine, $18.4 trillion in debt by the end of the year. So if you don't get some blockage in there, and I have, you know, you and I fought like a dog to get Boehner ousted, and it just seemed like we were just beating our heads against a brick wall. It just seemed like nobody was engaged. People wouldn't listen. You know, the political groups were kind of, I don't know if they were dejected, who knows, whatever. But the thing is that it was only a couple votes off, and they could have gotten rid of him. And look what he's done in the last year to help Obama out. It's just disgusting. And I think, you know, people really need to listen to those key speakers from CPAC again. And listen to what they're saying, whether it's Mike Lee or Cruz or Rand or Sarah or even Newt. Newt was awesome, you know, that this country is a great country, but it's only a great country if you curb the psychotics who have their fingers on the currency and their fingers on the damn war machine, because those people are insane. And if you don't think they aren't, just pick any decade in this country and look at all the military interference around the world and wars and everything else. And I'm not I've said this before, I'm not some isolationist peacenik, but I am sure anti-bullshit. And what in the hell are we doing? We are so far past anything constitutional or anything sane when it comes to fixing the problems in this country. We are crumbling. We are Rome, and it is burning. And we're all over the frickin' world, you know, causing revolutions and poking enemies who aren't weak. That's the stupid part. That's just what blows me away. We ain't dealing with no third world nation with dirt floors, man. We're dealing with a superpower. And we're poking this guy? Are you freaking kidding me? You know, wake the hell up, people. You know, rah, 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 our team, their team, you know, USA, Russia, rah, rah. I'm like going, my God, wake up. You don't even know what most people don't even have a clue what's going on over there. And they're getting this team thing going again, this whole freaking American political idol bullshit, while your country is burning to the ground, your Bill of Rights is being stomped on 24/7, and we shouldn't even be in the middle of this freaking situation, and people are taking sides? Get off of the insanity, get off the drugs, and focus on the important things in this country. Your Bill of Rights is gone. People are getting thrown in jail for protesting in this country. We've had more citizens shot by cops than soldiers died in the Iraq War. Are you kidding me? You know, we got problems. What the hell are we focusing on someplace 4,000, 5,000 miles away that most people couldn't spell before a week ago? Wake the hell up. God, there's my opening.
Wow.
Hey there.
You seem a little, someone was telling me that you're mellow, but you actually seem pretty fired up.
I have no idea what happened there, man.
Well,
okay.
No, it was spot on, and I think when you told everybody to go back and listen to those CPAC speeches again, I mean, half of them were, you know, rhino bullshit covered over by, you know, Frank Luntz's, focus group tested buzzwords, because, you know, as long as Turtle McConnell comes out holding a muzzle loader, people will think he's a conservative. No, you're not a conservative, McConnell. You're the epitome of the problem. You and Boehner are the poster children for what Republican losers look like. I mean, you would think that it would be Dole and H.W. Bush and McCain and that other shitbag from 2012 that Rove brought us, Mitt Romney. But no. It's McConnell and Boehner. Because what people fail to understand is the president is one guy. He has a couple of jobs limited by Article 2. But if Article 1 is not taken seriously, then that president becomes quasi-dictator. And that's what you have with Obama, who's basically just a moronic community organizer with Marxist and Muslim sympathies who could barely read a friggin' teleprompter. But he's got all this power because the Republicards gave it to George W. Bush back in the early part of this millennium. So who's really to blame here? The Democrat fools who elect a charismatic dipshit in order to take control of the imperial presidency and then they get him to mete out their agenda? Or is it the Republicards who friggin' handed it to them? I mean, who's really the enemy? I mean, let's face it, Obama's doing what Obama said he was going to do. Fundamental transformation, spread the wealth around. Apologize to everybody in the world because of the bad things America's done. Really, the bad things we've done? Look, and let's be clear, our war policy and our debt policy are shit, and they're screwing up the world. But you know what? They're also screwing us up here. So it's the enemy of the people over across the whole globe and the people here in these United States. But what has America done in our history on a net balance in the world? We've done far more good. If it wasn't for us, the world would be Nazi Germany or Imperial Japan. You see, so we've done more good things than bad things, but we got to own our bad things, and we got to point the blame to who did it, and we got to correct it and learn from it. But you don't go around projecting weakness, bowing to kings, bending over like a sissy, and opening up the world so that every tyrant around the planet will start thinking that they can be somebody. Because that's how that you create that kind of a vacuum, and you will get chaos, and then you will be forced into wars you don't want to be in. We need a purposeful foreign policy, one built on what Reagan said, peace through strength. In peace, you prepare for war. If you don't prepare for war, war will come to you. There's no such thing as a perpetual peace. Humanity is not built like that. There will always be some asshole somewhere in the world who thinks that he knows better than everybody else and he's going to use military power to take over and make things better for everybody. We have to stop him. The problem is when that asshole is our commander-in-chief, we got a problem. You got to get rid of him. Well, guess what? The end of an era is January 2017. The only question is, how many friggin' errors are we going to commit between now and then? Because, you see, Obama is not a politically shrewd guy. He's a mediocre golf player who likes to go on vacation after he pokes a Russian bear in the eye and heads over to Key Largo with the vice president. I mean, who's in charge here? This is how pathetic it is. But you know, that's him. The only reason he gets away with what he gets away with, the only reason the NSA is still spying on you is not because of Obama. It's because of dickheads like Peter King. Dickheads like McConnell and Boehner and Cornyn, Texas, why in the hell did you send Cornyn back onto the ticket after what he just did? Give me a break. And then, of course, you know, you get the meme from all the, you know, Republicans. Well, you know, we were tired of electing candidates who can't win. Candidates who can't win, listen to CPAC, because there were actual conservatives there. Sarah Palin, just great speech. Oh, well, she's kind of, you know, she was a problem. She was on the losing McCain ticket. Sarah Palin is popular, she's liked, and she's right. You know why? She's not a politician. She's one of us. She's a regular person, a citizen servant in politics, not a politician who's self-aggrandizing herself. She is a very powerful force. You like Ted Cruz? Thank Sarah Palin. You like Rand Paul? thank Sarah Palin. That's how it's done. Now, maybe you like Sarah Palin's personality, maybe you don't. Maybe you like her backwards Yoda talk or hokey style, maybe you don't. Doesn't matter. America listens to her, and she can make candidates. And what she echoed was what Rand Paul echoed, was what Ted Cruz echoed, was what Newt Gingrich echoed, was what Mike Lee echoed. Now, those people are on the same page. They come to it from different places. And that's the thing about a true big tent Republican Party. We can all be different, but we're all actually conservatives. And when you let non-conservatives into your ranks, that's when you fail. Oh, Newt Gingrich is a neocon warmonger, blah, 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 bullshit. Maybe he has some of those policies in the past. Maybe he has some now. I don't know. I don't always agree with him. But I know if it wasn't for Speaker Newt Gingrich, there would have been no Republican majority. There would have been no contract with America. There would have been no four, granted baseline, but no four balanced budgets. No capital gains tax cuts, no stopping Hillary Care. And we would have been where we are now before the year 2000. Newt Gingrich put a stop to it. Unfortunately, guys like Boehner and Graham and Santorum conspired to get rid of Newt in 99, and then Rove brought you Bush in 2000. Oh, well, Rove knows what he's doing. He's got that little whiteboard. Yeah, a little whiteboard, my ass. His candidate in 2000 needed the Supreme Court to hand him his office. That's not a good strategic move. Granted, Karl Rove made a shitload of money, but that wasn't good for you. And what did they do? The Republican-dominated Congress and the Republican Imperial Presidency went on a drunken spending spree of debt and war that lost Gingrich's majority by 2006 and handed the election to an unknown, incompetent, mealy-mouthed, sissified little community organizer from Chicago that nobody had ever friggin' heard of. He didn't win because he was, you know, smooth or exciting or well-spoken or intelligent or anything. He won because the Republicans caved. And this country fails every time the Republicans cave, whether they win or lose, because they're really good at caving when they lose and they're great at caving when they win. Only way you can fix it is to be a game changer, to be a little rebellious, to be a little ballsy, like Reagan, like Gingrich, like Cruz and Paul and Palin and Lee. Multiply it. Those speeches were very good. If you want to listen to them on Facebook, I mean, you can just find them on YouTube, but on Facebook, if you go to Liberty's Thunder show page and you click on the pick for tonight's show, all of those clips are posted right there in the comments. They are also in Chris's group, Liberty's Talk, on Facebook. And while you're at Liberty's Thunder, click like on that page, right-click the like button and say get notifications, and you'll find out when we're broadcasting, which is usually Thursday and Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Last week, we couldn't do it Thursday, so we ended up doing it Friday. So sometimes there's changes, so you just make sure you follow us on that page, and you'll know what's going on. And remember, all of the shows are available anytime you want on blogtalkradio.com. Just go to blogtalkradio.com, search out Liberty's Thunder. You go to our page. All the shows are right there listed. The title is a hyperlink. You click on it. Plays right in your browser. If you go below the scrolling graphics, you right-click the download button. You get an MP3. Listen to it in your MP3 device, send an email, burn a CD, give it to people. Remember, Chris and I do this. It costs us money. We don't make money doing this. This is all grassroots. But nobody knows it exists unless you tell them and you bring them here. So we want to thank everybody who's been helping us get the word out there. 2014 doesn't happen in November. It's going on right now. We already had a primary in Texas. That didn't go so well. Do you give up? Do you run around like, oh, man, we're going to lose. The Republicans are going to crush us. Or do you fight? Do you stand up like a proud American and make the case for liberty without compromise? Listen to what Mitch McConnell said. In the New York Times, he said, I think we are going to crush them everywhere. I don't think they are going to have a single nominee anywhere in the country. He's talking about you. You going to let him get away with that? Chris?
I'm here. I was typing and muted. You know, when he walked out with that gun, you know, was given that gun, I about fell out of my chair. That's the corniest freaking thing I've ever seen in my life. You know, it's embarrassing. I think one of the reasons, and it's not typical of me because I like to go listen to all the speeches like at CPAC, and I listened to the first day and they had so freaking many rhinos back to back to back, I just got sick of it. And, I'm just sick of these guys. They are weak. They are complacent. They are handing the country over to failure. And now they're all running around trying to get us in a freaking war. There are days and then there are days. And this last couple weeks have been one of those days for me, because I get world politics because that's probably, you know, a lot more interesting to me than U.S. politics, because I'm beginning to think that Americans are just freaking on drugs all the time or something, you know. But it's frustrating because we can win. And you go, well, who's we? Well, liberty-minded people. People give a crap about the country, who care about sovereignty. And that's so important to understand. If you study the EU right now, and you look at what's going on with the IMF and its debt load in the EU, it's crumbling, falling the hell apart. Germany is the only country in the EU that has a solid rock economic foundation. Well, and this is where it starts getting weird, because we want to cause a war with a country who hasn't invaded another country forever in your conscious lifetime, okay? And Germany has 6,000 corporations in Russia and does business, does $1.5 billion a day of trade back and forth. And we're over there screwing around with that system that's fragile and on the edge. And I'm like going, and we're falling apart. We got cities like Chicago. I mean, that's the most devastating, classical picture of social communism, socialism, whatever you want to call it. They actually, if you want to do some research, and it's almost just like you just go, you got to be kidding me. But some of the early mayors, Democrat mayors that got a hold of Chicago, actually went to the Soviet Union and tried to model Chicago after that idea. People think that communism is an Eastern thing because of Russia and the Soviet Union and Red China. Communism is a Western ideal. It's formed in Europe, and it spread to Europe, and Russia was the first big country that embraced it in a revolution. You know, Russia and then China had their revolution, you know, bloody revolutions. But in Europe, after Second World War, or even going into, you know, prior to Second World War, these ideas were floating around the world. And these academics were, you know, perfecting Marx's philosophies and perverting them to fit into the existing systems. But after the Second World War, when the world got rebuilt and the U.S. decided that they're going to be everybody's frickin' army, which was the stupidest frickin' thing in the world, because what it allowed for in Europe was they didn't have to have their own damn military budget, so they were able to take that extra money as those countries rebuilt themselves and became prosperous again, and they had all that extra money to experiment with this new socialistic idea, which was really just a soft form of communism. And then but people, academics and politicians in this country looked at Europe and went, wow, it works over there. Let's do it here. You know? Now it's freaking falling apart. And Europe is starting to make a transition back. If you pick any government, you look at UK, you look at Scotland, you look at Germany, you start looking around the line, a lot of these countries are starting to reverse the political pendulum and starting to vote conservatives in power and starting to look at, you know, serious fixes like what we've seen, you know, with Scott Walker, you know, going, we can't keep doing this shit. It was a really cool idea for 40, 50 years, but you can't pay people to do nothing. You know, that's really the problem. You can't take capitalism and freedom and make it pay for socialism, because that's really the only difference between socialism and communism is who owns the, you know, the industry. And socialism, they have milked the free enterprise system to a point where you can't really tell the difference between the corporations and the government, which is kind of a corporatism, fascism ideal. So what you have is kind of a merge of all these things. But you know what it really is, folks? It's communism. That's what it is. It's falling the hell apart. And it's really bad here, but you just don't see it yet. And I'll tell you why you don't see it yet. Because they keep printing frickin' money and borrowing money. But when the world quits buying our debt, government bonds, or when China and Russia and India dump our bonds or cash them out, which will be, you know, if you take four or five major countries, including China, which is $1.3 trillion, and they decide not to reinvest it or roll it over, then they dump about $2 trillion back on the market that we don't have to buy back, so they'll print it. Sooner or later, dollar will crash. I have no doubt about it. Unless we get some people in there that have sound economic theories, it will crash. I don't know what they'll do afterwards. There's all kinds of theories on that. I'm not, you know, some world-class economics guy, and I don't think anybody really is. I think they're all freaking insane because it's speculative, most of it. You know, it's an evolving concept. But the foundations are gone. They're gone in Europe. And they're gone in the United States. So I don't know if that means they want to get us in a war. I know one side of me says that's their goal, is to get us in a freaking world war, because then everything goes to shit and everybody's all living in fear and they can do what the hell they want. Or if they're just poking around in desperation, you know, trying to expand their markets, trying to disrupt healthy markets, because a lot of that, you know, is I see that, you know, and that it's kind of like that idea of crabs in a pot, you know, where one tries to get out and the other ones will reach up and grab it and pull it down. You know, you got to stay down in here where we're all insane and dying. So it's a mess. Politically, it's a mess. Economically, it's a mess. Militarily, we're freaking insane. I mean, we're all over Africa. Nobody ever talks about it in the news. We got countries going to hell in Africa. We got revolutions. We got the U.S. right in the middle of all this crap, just like they were in the Middle East. And the turnaround, we're doing it again. You know, other countries have been down, you know, China and Russia and all these other countries have been down there building trade and building energy resource, you know, relationships with these countries. And I guess we just don't like that, so we got to go create wars. I mean, it's just the most mind-boggling thing in the world to me, because our country was founded on a peaceful trade concept, and that's what made us great. But somewhere after the Second World War, we thought that, you know, the barrel of a gun and a bomb and our military was trade. I'm not sure what psycho, insane mother bear figured that one out, but, yeah, it worked for a few years, but it's all changing. And it's changing rapidly, and it doesn't look good, you know, on a world scale, because the world's getting sick to death. Afghanistan and Iraq were a wake-up call for a lot of people in our country and a lot of people around the world, because that's out there for the whole. I know that our news won't tell you all the shit that's falling apart in Afghanistan or tell you about the 30, 40, 50 people killed every damn day in Iraq in a country that didn't used to have terrorism before we went and blew the hell out of it because we were pissed off at the leader because he wanted to form his own bank and not be, reliant on the IMF system. You know, that was the real reason. The weapons of mass destruction was the, what they sold the people, you know, so we could go to war. But the whole world sees our American foreign policy over the last 10, 15, 20 years, and they're like getting sick to hell of it, tired of it. Now, when we were the economic machine of the world and the trade doll of the world and our money was stable, it's funny how people will put up with a lot of crap when the money's good. You know what I'm saying? And they'll ignore a lot of things when the money's good. But when the money starts going bad and the military and the foreign policy is all the crap, then people start getting sick and tired of it, and they start making new alliances, and they start making other decisions about the future of their country. It's just a natural progression. It doesn't say this guy's right or that guy's wrong or Russia's right or Germany's right or whatever. You know, but people just get up and go, we're sick of you're insane. We can't do business with you. We can't trust you. We don't know when you're going to blow us up or you're going to have your NGOs come in here and destroy our freaking political system because all of a sudden you didn't like us or we didn't cut the right, you know, oil deal with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's the wake-up call, Rex, is when people go, I just can't deal with your insanity anymore. It's like an abused wife syndrome. And that's how the whole world is right now.
Oh yeah.
Well, we're getting to that point of diminishing returns, and what I mean by that, you know, like when you're shopping for milk, everybody always wants to stick their hand in the back of the freezer there to get the one with the longest expiration date, and then it expires, right? You still got a little bit left, and you think, okay, well, the sell-by date was 4 days ago, but it's probably still good, and you might drink some. Then, you know, another 4 days goes by, and you think, well, I don't know, and you kind of smell it. It does smell so good. And then, you know, another 4 days go by, and you're like, oh, man, if I drink this, I'm going to get sick and die. Well, the rest of the world's been putting up with the bullshit that the Federal Reserve has been spewing in this country and all across the globe since 1913, and it's getting to the point where they're thinking to themselves, this is no good for us. And guess what? The oligarchs that have taken control of your government, they're thinking it's probably time to crash the thing, too. why would they do that, Rex? I mean, if they're in charge of our government and they're making profits here, well, why would they want to crash the dollar? Because, you see, the whole nature of a Ponzi scheme, the whole nature of a fiat paper scheme is that you want to be at the top of the pyramid and just inflate, which means increase the money supply, and wick wealth away from the poor, the poorest of the poor, the middle class, and the wealthy. Not the uber wealthy, but the wealthy that are less wealthy than you. You want to wick all that wealth away from them and bring it to you. And one country is just not enough. In fact, the world is not enough. They probably want to do it across the whole cosmos. And some of these psychos actually think that they're going to download their brains into computers and fly across the cosmos, and they're going to breed a bunch of little, you know, Homo sapiens-style slaves here on Earth to do their dirty work. You think that's crazy? Yeah, it's nuts, but that's what they think. In the meantime, the rest of the world is going, to hell with you. That's not good for us. It's not good for the rest of the world either, but it's not good for us. Does that mean that we should enforce by the end of a gun our fiat paper scheme? Hell no, but that's what they're doing. What we need to do is bring it back to sanity. And as Trog pointed out clearly, it's bad. It's getting worse. It's more dangerous than your Fox News, MSLSD, certainly not news, television, Twitter feed, Facebook, fan page, crap is telling you. It's really bad. But guess what? That's not necessarily a terrible thing. See, when things get bad, you can get dejected. You can try to quit. You can freak out. Those are all responses that are at your disposal, and you're free to choose them. They're useless, but you can do them. And the fact is that a lot of people do employ that kind of...
Now what the fuck are we supposed to do? We're some real pretty shit now, man!
When you panic, the aliens break into your room, you run out of ammo, and you end up with an alien jaw into your skull. Don't panic. Always carry a towel. But don't panic. What you need to do is realize that this is the time. This is the year where you can draw a stark contrast between the Keynesians, the Marxists, the communists, the statists, the oligarchs, all of the fools who got it all wrong in and out of the GOP. and show them what a real message is. You see, the problem with Republicans, the Republican Party is comfortable being the Democrat light party. They like the same policies as the Democrats. They just don't want to not be invited to their parties. So what they decide to do is, well, we can win elections by speaking against the Democrats, and then we can just kind of do the same thing that they do or enable them to do it, only we'll just feign that we're really opposed to it. And these idiots on the right will keep electing us, and we'll be a minority party. But, you know, we can still go get drunk at the old Ebbett Grill, and we still get that lobbyist money, and it's kind of fun. Plus, we get all that inside deals, and we can make some money. That's how they think. They like to be the second party. But the problem is that that doesn't benefit anybody. It doesn't benefit the Republican Party. It doesn't benefit the people who vote for the Republican Party. It certainly doesn't benefit Libertarians, Constitution Party, Independents, or anybody else, because the duopoly just crowds them out of the game. And so people end up with this lesser of two evils bullshit, or sometimes even lesser of three evils. And the Democrats like it, too, because, you see, for them to look like the bleeding heart liberals and appeal to the emotional sentimentalism of the liberal voters, they have to speak as if, you know, we're for the poor and we're for the environment and we're for putting a unicorn in every house and rainbow shooting out of your ass. But what they really are is the same thing as the Republicans, only worse. And a real principled person on the left can't possibly really like the Democrats either. The fact is that both of them are anti-liberty. Both of them are anti-sovereignty. Both of them are anti-autonomy. And increasingly, both of them are anti-American. I mean, what else can you call it that in the same week you declare that you're reducing your military capability, not defense spending on boondoggle airplanes that don't fly that you spent billions on and crap like that, or, you know, $800 hammers and shit, $20,000 toilet seats. I'm talking about cutting actual military capability. The same week you decide you're going to cut your military capability down to the lowest level it's been in 60 years, you decide now would be a good time to poke Putin in the eye because, you know, he seems to be aggressive. Guy likes taking his shirt off. I guess he thinks he's Captain Kirk. He rides bears, and he's got his eye on Crimea. And what is the first thing that Obama did? Let's see, he told the Poles, oh, by the way, we're not going to give you that missile defense shield. Oh, signal number one to Putin, I'm a complete wuss. And then what happens? You're going to get more aggression out of him. Now is Putin doing good things for Russia? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I don't care. We're not Russians. We're Americans. What we should be concerned about is what happens here. Now, that doesn't mean that we have to destroy the Russians to succeed. The Russians can succeed too, but that's their business. When our interests line up, we work with them. When they don't, we don't. When they become far too belligerent, we're supposed to be able to project power and put them back in their place. But you can't project power if you're weak. You can't project power if people don't trust you. They don't believe your word. You can't project power if you're toppling people's governments, interfering in their internal affairs, when you don't have a legitimate security interest, and then turn around and chastise others for doing the same thing, especially when you've just signaled that you're weak. Because they will come after you. That's the dangerous position that the community organizer you made commander-in-chief put us in. But guess what? He really can't do anything without Congress. Oh, well, I don't know. He's been doing stuff with executive orders and his phone and his pen. And, you know, he got the Senate. And we're Republicans. I mean, it's a math problem. We only control, one-third of government. Really? You control the House, which means you control the money. You also control the ability to impeach the son of a bitch, but that's a different story. But what do? They just tell you it's a math problem. We can't do anything you want us to do unless you give us a majority number. Please reelect us, and then we'll do it. Really? Because, let's see, you told us that in 94, and Clinton was doing some stuff. Let's see, what is he doing? Let's see, the nationalized health care, stimulus spending, and a military reduction policy and dragging us into war. Sounds a lot like another guy. I would say it's the first black president, but I know that Clinton was the first black president, so maybe it was the first woman president. That's it, the first woman president, Mrs. Barack Obama did the same thing as the first black president, Bill Clinton. Interesting, no? But what happened? Here comes Gingrich. Newtzilla pops in. Majority rolls back Billy Clinton. And what happens? Dick Morris says, dude, Gingrich is kicking your ass. You're going to have to triangulate. So after the second government shutdown, Billy comes out and says, the era of big government is over. Really? Because if that was true, how is it that the last shutdown that we had in October, you know, the Ted Cruz caused shutdown, shut down 17% of the federal government, and it was still 40% bigger than it was in 1996. It's not over. It's never over unless you maintain a full-court press. But who is it that abdicated that full-court press? The Republicans. They turned on Gingrich. They got rid of Gingrich, and they ruined everything. And now they're telling you everything that we ruined is the Democrats' fault. No, it's not. Between 2000 and 2006, the Democrats weren't in charge of anything. So it's your fault. Have the Democrats made it worse since then? Sure. So how is reelecting the same Republicans from the Bush era going to make things better? It's not. Is it going to make things less bad? Probably not. The only shot you've got is real conservatives, real libertarians, real constitutionalists, and there's more and more of them, and their ranks are growing and their power is growing. But office holders can only do so much. Ultimately, there are two forces at play. When it always comes down to it, there are two forces at play. One is who controls the guns, meaning who controls the military, and is it an armed or disarmed populace, but who controls the military? And you can see that right now there's a certain community organized trying to purge your military of anybody with honor. And number two, who sways the people? Now, we're not a majoritarian country. It's supposed to be based on a Republican small r structure, right, which means that it isn't majority rule. This country is designed to protect the rights of the individual and the minority, not give them special privileges, just protect their rights so that they have equal standing before the law. So it's not about majoritarianism, but it is about the popular will. What are people willing to do? Well, you saw it. We didn't want to go to war anymore. The idiots, both the commander-in-chief and the idiots in Congress, could not make the case to you to bomb the shit out of Syria. Left, right, independent, Republican, Democrat, there was a majority that said no. And what happened? Well, we didn't bomb the shit out of Syria. We still kept on sending arms to al-Qaeda to topple Assad, but that didn't go as far as they wanted because of the people. So ultimately what it comes down to is what are you doing individually to let other people know that there is a movement, there is sanity, there are representatives who actually want to serve, and don't fall for this cult of personality crap. Oh, I like Cruz, I hate Lee, I like Rand, I don't like Sarah, blah, blah, bullshit. They are doing a job. Now, are you going to agree with them on everything? No, that's never going to happen. You never agreed 100% with Ron Paul. You never agreed 100% with Gingrich. You never agreed 100% with Ronald Reagan. You probably wouldn't agree 100% with Thomas Jefferson or George Washington either. But on most fundamental things you do, you get those people into office and you back them up. But that only happens if you personally reach out every single day to 1, 2, 3, 10 people. 10 people who were not aware or involved before. Does that mean they're not politically active? Not necessarily, but for the most part, probably not. But even if they're politically active, they might be Republican tools. Oh, I helped Cornyn get reelected. Really? That's great. Did you know that he voted for wiping out the debt ceiling in order to give Obama unlimited borrowing power for a year? Oh, I didn't know that. Well, good. Maybe you should have thought about that beforehand and not voted for the son of a bitch. So you need to get to these people before the primaries. You need to get to them before the election. You need to educate them now and then have them go out and do the same thing and so on and so on. It's not fun. It's thankless work. But if you want to save the country, that's what you have to do. Chris?
Doctor? You know, you got me all depressed. No, I'm just kidding.
I was supposed to pump you up.
We were having a discussion about the metrosexual Americans on chat. Deli's trying to be funny. But, oh, God, I can't get this image out of my mind now. Where's my club? I don't know what it takes people to stop being reactive. I grew up in a day and an age, you know, I don't know, call me an old guy now. I don't know. But, you know, I was raised to be self-sufficient. You know, I grew up with my grandparents who were Depression era people, came from Oklahoma, from the Dust Bowl and the Depression in a Model A Ford and dirt roads, and, you know, and came to Oregon, and, you know, they were farmers and hunters, and so I grew up learning how to do things and how to, you know, build a garden and, you know, skin a deer and things like that, and I also, you know, grew up in the Boy Scouts. You know, I'll never forget, be prepared. My dad all my life used to talk about these two words I'll never forget, because, you know, when you made a mistake or, you know, mashed your finger with a hammer or you did something stupid because you were, you know, weren't paying attention, it was always pay attention, plan ahead. What's the goal? What are you trying to accomplish? You know, start with the end in mind. I mean, these things are embedded in my life. I don't know what they teach people anymore, Rex. I don't
want to
walk down. Yeah, it's pretty scary. And I think that, you know, we have these long conversations, you and I do, about, you know, the whole moral societal breakdown. It's a plan. And that's the scary part, is that most people, whether it be Christians or conservatives or Republicans or whatever the hell they want to call themselves, is they're spending all their frickin' time reacting to things. And you don't win reacting. You know, the libs, the commies, the Marxists, all these people you're scared to death of have had a plan for 100 years, and they've been steadily developing that plan and moving into every aspect of our society, into our government, into all these illegal organizations, you know, whether it be the NSA or the EPA or whatever, all those things the government's not supposed to be doing. And they've moved into all these key positions and into our educational system, into our colleges. I mean, our colleges are full of commies. And they teach our young minds, you know, on how to view the world and what's good and what's bad and what works and what doesn't work. And we allowed it to happen. You know, I grew up with a family, both my grandmother, my father, and my mother were all educators, and they weren't commies. And why in the hell did this country allow it to happen? And I think that it goes back to things that we've talked about in the past. When you look at the, you know, the 80s and the 90s, especially the prosperity age of the 90s, and the explosion of the Internet and the dot-com, you know, explosion, and all the wealth that was created off of, you know, manipulating money and IPOs and all that stuff, because I lived, you know, in the Microsoft era area. And, you know, I saw the wealth, I saw the losses, I saw all the wheeling and dealing. You know, we couldn't. And I also saw something very important. I saw all of our industries get tired of the federal government taking away, you know, all their tax benefits and taking away their profits and taxing the crap out of them and regulating the crap out of them and EPAing the crap out of them, to the point where these companies decided that, screw you, I'm going to take my money and I'm going to take my manufacturing and my ideas and I'm going to go to other countries where they don't do this to me, and I'm going to build factories over there, and then I'm going to sell you shit from over there, and I'm going to keep doing business. And this is where we're at. In 2014, we were here a long time ago. And for some of us who have studied economics and you know, keep an eye on this stuff or live in it, you know, I'm pure free enterpriser and live in it. You know, I've seen this coming for a long time. But all of this is correctable if your money's sound and your moral society or your civil society is sound. And neither one of those are sound right now. So, you know, you look at when Reagan came into power, it was a mess. I was a teenager in that era. I remember the gas lines. I remember Carter. I remember the hostage situation. I remember a president getting on the television telling us to put a sweater on and turn our heater down. I remember that. I remember freezing my ass off as a teenager because my dad turned the damn heat down in the house. You know, and we all submitted to this less than American exceptionalism. And when Reagan came in, he was decisive. He sat down, you know, Paul Craig Roberts, you know, and some of these guys, and they developed a system, economic system, government system. They cut regulations, and they let the machine and the greatness of America shine. But the people could rise up still because we weren't doped up, drugged up. You know, family unit was still strong. The basic stable ideas of what's an American. You know, when I think about who I am as an American, and then I go out into the world, I'm like going, who in the hell are you people? You know, what do you believe in? What do you stand for? What's important to you? It's hard to tell. Who raised you is one of my favorite terms. I'm always saying that, you know, and always gets a laugh from people. Unfortunately, it's very sad. And there's a lot, we have a lot of problems in our system. And when I look out across the pattern of America, and I look at these red states and blue states, and I live in a blue state that used to be a red state. And I'm telling you, it's tough. It's tough to be around these people because they're freaking clueless. And they listen to freaking NPR and watch CNN, and they're like still blaming Bush. You know, I mean, it's like people are nuts, man. And their decisions they make and the economic decisions they make in the state I live in, and I'm like going, you're going to destroy the damn economy. You know, we just went through a freaking 2008 was a crash. And the only reason that the correction has not come, and this is something you and I talk about all the time, and I'm not sure people get it. I think sometimes people think we're a couple conspiracy nuts, but we're pretty sound, both of us, you more than me, on economics.
Hey, speak for yourself, white man. I got my tinfoil hat on.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing is that we didn't have the correction from the dot-com bust, what we call the dot-bomb era. And I was right there in the Bellevue-Redmond era when that happened. I watched a lot of fortunes disappear over frickin' night. We lost a couple $1 trillion in our economy overnight. And I'm going, oh man, here comes a correction. We're going to hit a recession. I didn't think we were going to go into a depression, and it didn't happen, Rex. Well, I mean, $2 trillion disappeared in a blink of the eye. Well, that's because the Fed dropped interest rates and started pumping money into this bullshit housing market scheme, and it kept the economy going. You know, they just shifted the problem and covered it up, printed a bunch of money, borrowed a bunch more money, and kept going. And so we had a correction that never really happened inside of a fake economy held up by a whole new bubble scheme, the housing bubble. And then when it finally all crashed in 2008, the first thing they did was borrowed and printed again. And I'm like going, God, you know, I know that the whole system's been screwed ever since we built the Fed, but a lot of it still had some fairly sound economic, and you could argue that, you know, principles. We still had the gold standard. They were still tied to that. They still had to, you know, maintain that system, that tie, and it was kind of like it kind of held you back a little bit from doing insane shit. But, you know, Nixon, a Republican, took us off the gold standard, and after that, it was all over. It was, I mean, you can look at the economic charts, the debt charts, the interest charts, you know, and just look at them, and you saw the ups and downs to the economy, and then all of a sudden they took us off the gold standard, and the sky was the limit. And that was also about the same time that, you know, we decided that we, you know, have continual war, because we're not even supposed to have a standing army. Continual war, and they spread into the world economy, and these idiots all got together, and they figured that if we would just intertwine all the economies of the world, then there'd be no more wars. I mean, this is the brilliance of these idiots. And that, how'd that work out? How'd taking us off the gold standard work out? You know, how did, I mean, we defeated, or Reagan's concepts, you know, economically broke the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union falls apart. and everybody rejoices. But they forgot about the commies that lived in this country. They forgot that the ideas and the ideals and the principles of those people existed here. And so everybody started off on this prosperity era because America, you know, was this force in the world, and the whole world was on our economic system, on our U.S. dollar and the petrodollar, and we went into this whole new world of technology and all this money to be made and all chasing the American dream. And these people were undermining the core values of our country, our society, our civil society, our moral society, and our sound economics. And we've been on this jumping from bubble to bubble to bubble to bubble, you know, for the past 40, 50 years, and it caught up to us. And here's the scary part. Nobody, you and I have been on this now for 2 years, nobody has done anything to even talk about or address the underlying problem. And especially the Republicans, who are supposed to be the, you know, limited government, sound economics, you know, family unit, you know, blah, blah, blah party, they've done nothing. They won't touch it because they're more afraid of not getting reelected than they are fixing the damn country and of measures that might make them unpopular. They can't figure out why they keep losing. Cruz nailed it. You know,
yeah.
President Dole, President Romney, you know, and President McCain, you know, they didn't stand for anything. Are they bad people? No. And I don't want to get off on the person that, you know, attacking people personally, but they are weak. They didn't stand for anything. They had no solutions. Why in the hell would people reelect Republicans after what the Bush administration did for 6 years? It crushed our country. These wars, the debts, he raised the debt ceiling higher than anybody in the history, all the presidents together, and they were supposed to be Republicans. He increased the size of the Department of Education, and then every day you see this crap about Common Core and, you know, the federal government invading itself into our children's lives, and we don't have, you know, any control over raising and educating our children anymore. Well, thank Bush, you know, because he did it. He empowered it so damn much that we can't get now it's an overbearing monster. You know, that's the part where people
behind.
Need to wake up.
Every child left behind.
Insanity. Freaking
insanity.
That
kind of mentality, it's the same thing that causes us to have rhinos. It's the same mentality as the No Child Left Behind or Common Core or any of these other friggin' programs. It is a system that is designed to confuse equality before the law and equal dignity with equality and outcome. And when you try to level the outcome as opposed to the means, then all you get is a race to mediocrity and who can get to the bottom first. And what happens? That happens in your education system. It permeates into your economy. It permeates into your mediating institutions. And it permeates into your politics, because then you get mediocre, namby-pamby, sissified rhinos instead of real conservatives who stand up and speak like real Americans with balls, people like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Sarah Palin, who's got more balls than half the Republicans right now. So I think you're absolutely right. And the worst thing about it is that most people are so busy, and it's not bad to be busy. Life is, you know, busy. You got kids, you got school, you got, you know, to get to your job or run your business or whatever, all the stuff, all your obligations, that people pick up their news and sound bites, mostly from places like Fox News, and they get misguided, because what they do is they bring on somebody like Rand Paul or Ted Cruz or Trey Gowdy or Lily Gohmert, and they talk to them, right? And some of them do better than others. Neil Cavuto does it. Sean Hannity does it. Greta has them sometimes. Some of the others won't do it. Shep Smith would never dare talk to a real conservative. They might bite him. He's scared. Eat a sandwich, Shep. You look like a girl. And what happens? As soon as the candidate goes off screen, they bring a panel of neocons on to rip into pieces. Or they'll bring you some kind of namby-pamby little neocon sissy. This is the person from the right, and then they'll bring you like some kind of roaring, shrill libtard on the other side, and the host will kind of guide the conversation to make, you know, Rand Paul and Ted Cruz are dangerous. They shut down the government. They're crazy. That's the kind of stuff that goes on, and that's why you, if you're listening to this show, it's on your shoulders. It sucks, believe me,
I got better things to do. Chris has got better things to do than prep these shows all week and try to keep up with the news and try to find the real sources and then cut the clips and then do, you know, now we're doing almost 6 hours a week on the air, unpaid work. Why do we do it? Well, because we live here too. I got nowhere to go. If it falls apart here, I'm screwed. So I got as much skin in the game as you do. So, you know, we have to work together. It falls on your shoulders. It sucks. Just get up and do it. If you've got the skills and you got the inclination, run for office. If you don't, help out somebody who's running for office. And most importantly, wake up the fools. And I'm not trying to sit and tell, try to find a committed Marxist and convince them that free market economies are more successful and better and more moral. It's a waste of time, okay? That's a waste of time. What you need to do is actually get to the people who don't participate or the people who do participate but are so busy they just pull the lever for the red elephant jersey. And you got to wake them up. Chris Christie is not a conservative. Is he good for New Jersey? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I don't live in Jersey. But if Jersey, if you let Chris Christie out, we're going to destroy him. I'm a rhino hunter. I will hunt down that rhino. Just like we did with Mitt Romney. Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, no. Oh, you think Barack Obama beat Mitt Romney? No, he didn't. We cost Mitt Romney that election because most of us with half a friggin' brain would not demean ourselves to voting for a progressive liberal Democrat with our label on him. Severely conservative my ass. That's why he lost. I mean, do you really think that 1.4 million people actually like Gary Johnson? Come on. That guy's not really likable. But 1.4 million people did say, as much as this guy sucks, he's not Mitt Romney. You know? So it's real simple. You want to win? Quit running, President McCain, Dole, and Romney. And how about, oh, I don't know, let's see, President Cruz, President Paul, President Lee. You got a whole series of choices. Heck, President Palin would be better than any of these other jerk-offs. So that's what you have to do. That's up to you. Wake them up. 114 million eligible voters did not vote in 2012. Even more will not vote in 2014. Just grab a couple of those. Teach them who the real candidates are. Get them to go door knocking. Get them to the polls, and you'll have conservatives. Now, one of the smartest conservatives out there, I don't care if you think he's really a conservative or he's not liberty-minded enough or he's made some mistakes, blah, blah, blah. I don't care, okay? I'm not a huge Rick Perry fan. I don't trust him. He smells and looks like George Bush, and he came over from the Democrat Party, and Rove was the one who brought him, so I'm not sure about him. But his speech at CPAC, fantastic. That's why I played some of it at the beginning. He's spot on. So as long as they're on your side, work with them. But don't fall for the bullshit where they talk like conservatives when they're running and they govern like Democrats in skirts when they get in office. You got to smell them out. And that's what we're doing here. Now, who can smell out these guys? Someone who knows how to win elections. Someone who has done more conservative things in the last 30 years than anybody else. Now, does that mean that he's more constitutionalist than Ron Paul? No. Does it mean he's more principled vis-a-vis liberty than Ron Paul? No. But I hate to tell you this. As much as I love Ron Paul, and I've been reading Ron Paul for two decades now, he was one of the most ineffective congressmen ever as a congressman. He sparked the movement. He taught us about the Fed. He did all sorts of wonderful things. But as a congressman, he was fairly ineffective. Newt Gingrich, on the other hand, as Speaker of the House, was severely effective. And sometimes we forget about the things that we don't see or the things that we don't hear. You don't hear about all the stuff that would have happened. You don't see all the stuff that would have happened had Newt Gingrich not stood in that breach against the Dole rhinos and one of the most popular, intelligent, and capable liberal Democrat presidents this side of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Newt Gingrich did that. Here's Newt from CPAC.
Said, it's time for a little rebellion on the battlefield of ideas. I want to suggest to you that actually it's time for a big rebellion on the battlefield of ideas. And I also came to issue a warning. If our movement is primarily anti-Obama, we will in fact reduce the number of victories we should win this fall. If we spend the next 3 years being primarily anti-Hillary, we will virtually guarantee her election. as the first Democrat in almost 70 years to hold the White House for a third term. We must stop being, it's a fact, no Democrat has gotten reelected three times in a row since Harry Truman replaced Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And we don't want that to happen. But to make sure that doesn't happen, we must stop being the opposition movement, and we must become the alternative government movement that will help make the life of every American better so that they understand what we would do that would be right, not just what the left is doing that is wrong. And there's a revolution coming, and we have the opportunity to lead it. It will dramatically shrink the bureaucracies, return power to the American people, increase the quality of your life, and do so in a way that returns us back to much more limited government. What we stand for is an effective, accountable, limited government under the Constitution. And that is a choice we can win. Let me also say that the first great breakout was in North Dakota and was the development of fracking. And the fact is today we've had a revolution in natural gas and oil. We are now once again the largest natural gas producer in the world. And if this president had any sense of seriousness about Russia, he would have already issued an executive order allowing American natural gas to be shipped to Europe. He would already be opening up offshore and federal properties for exploration, and he would explain to Putin that we're going to drive down the price of oil enough that Russia will once again be bankrupted, as it was in the Cold War by Ronald Reagan. And if you look out 5 or 10 years, and that's what strategy is, a poverty-stricken Putin is not a very dangerous Putin. I mean, much of his current power comes from the high price of oil. And so I think we can design strategies that increase American jobs, increase a healthy American economy, weaken Russia, and do so in a way which is totally peaceful and yet stunningly powerful, which is what Reagan was about. He defeated the Soviet Empire without a general war by intelligent, sound strategy. We can break out. I hope all of you will go home and find pioneers you can work with. I hope you will go home and work with your local government, your local school board, develop the new breakthroughs, work with your state legislators. I do think that we have an enormous opportunity to create a better future. But I want to close with one thing which I said last night on Crossfire, because I want to defend the president. I think sometimes we have to be big enough to stand up for him even if we don't agree with him very often. There are a number of people who have criticized him for going to Key Largo in Florida while there is a crisis underway in Ukraine. Now, I just want you to know, the president spent all of last week proving that he was capable of being ineffective. I believe he can be as ineffective in Key Largo as he was in the White House. So my closing appeal to you is to go back home and say to your friends, stand up for Obama's right to be utterly ineffective wherever he happens to be, and don't expect more than that because you ain't going to get it. Thank you, good luck, and God bless you.
Awesome. He's right, you know. Obama can be just as ineffective, limp-wristed community organizer in Key Largo or Kenya or Australia or here in D.C. the most important thing is that when your commander-in-chief is weak, if he is your emperor, you're in big trouble. But when your commander-in-chief, and everybody knows this, is a rented commander-in-chief, he's temporary, but you have balls in your people, in your military might, and you have sense and intelligence, and you don't run around using brute power, but you use your brain and your integrity. then even if you have an incompetent commander-in-chief, people will still fear you and trust you because of who you are as a people. But you see, what happens when your representatives, your elected representatives, who are supposed to be representing your interests, not their own and not those who bought and paid for their seats, but the people of these United States, when they capitulate to this weak simpleton, then people around the world will act against you because they no longer trust you and they no longer fear you. And that's the problem that we have now. Did everybody like Ronald Reagan across the globe in the 1980s? No, no, but they respected him. They trusted him to keep his word, and they knew that he meant what he said, and that if they did get out of line, he would destroy them. That's projecting power so that you can live in peace. But when you project weakness, you will live in war. That was Newt Gingrich at CPAC, and like him or not, the important thing is listen to him because he knows what he's talking about. We've only got about 11 minutes of live air left. Now, what that means is if you're listening right now on the Internet, live, that is, your browser will cut you off at 11 p.m. Eastern. You won't be able to hear the show anymore. We're probably going to spill over a little bit. If you want to listen, then you need to call in and listen on your phone. And that phone number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. We won't be bringing any calls on, but you'll be able to hear the rest of the show live on your phone. Otherwise, if you're listening in podcast or a WAV file or whatever on the Internet, just keep rolling. It'll keep playing. There won't be a hiccup. And remember that we will be back 9 p.m. Eastern this Thursday for our open lines. We'll do a little bit of a little show, catch you up on what's going on in conservative movement, and then we'll open up the lines. So make sure you tell everybody and make sure you call in. It's not a conference call. We'll just bring you on one at a time, and we can talk about conservative things and what we are doing to bring the conservative case for liberty to the wider audience. What do you think of Newt there, Chris?
I always liked Newt. You know, I know people don't because they want to label him, you know, he's a neocon and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he lived in a different era. You know, he was very instrumental with Reagan in the Cold War. And it just, you know, I think about the people that I respect or I listen to or I've learned from or I study in terms of trying to define, you know, what the solutions are. And, you know, I love Rand Paul. I love Newt. I love Ron Paul. I'm a mixed bag because what I'm looking for is the core of principles that they're good at. And I think that one of the things that I, in you know, you and I were, man, we were on the air a lot in the primary and a lot after the primary, all the way up to the election, and then we, you know, toned it down to once a week. But one of the things that I've seen, and I didn't realize how bad it was until I actually, because I had never walked day by day through a presidential primary. You know, I was, you know, kind of kept a wary eye on them and, you know, through the years. But this one I got it very involved in. And that's where it really hit me, the political machine, you know, the marketing, the media, the consultants, the Internet, the social media, and how they manipulate people and how pliable people really are. I've always known that people in masses aren't too bright. I've always known that, and don't take offense to that, but that's just the way people are. I mean, mass marketing has been around for a long time. You know, Bernays, you know, he got a whole society to smoke cigarettes. He got women on cigarettes. He designed marketing that, you know, 4 out of 5 doctors recommend Camel. I mean, come on. Let's light up this thing and burn our lungs and this is good for you. I mean, you know, people aren't too bright in groups. And America is the mass media consumer market of the world. We have lived in a level of prosperity unlike any country in the world. We got fat. We got lazy. We have doctors that, you know, the best medicine in the world, and yet health-wise, we're crap. You know, I mean, I've studied this stuff. You know, I've been in, you know, martial arts and athletics and health clubs and all my life. And I so I've seen the society break down. And like I said before, I grew up with educators. You know, my kids were in private school because we were very concerned about the direction the public school was going. And that was actually kind of a long time ago now. But now it's a real mess. But it is amazing to me that people, the way they trigger, in other words, how do you trigger people to get them off target or off focus or to get them to dislike somebody? I saw it all through the primary. And I always thought it was the Democrats that were the slime ball, you know, disinformation people until I went through this primary and I watched the RNC and the Romney team and Fox News do what they did to the conservatives. And then I watched social media and all the trolls and paid trolls and how they'd get into groups and they would trigger doubt and they'd run around and post this and paste that and post this article and bring up things in the past, whether it was Ron Paul or Newt or whatever the case, how they avoided Santorum's record to make him look like a conservative. Boy, that was the biggest sell job of all of them. You know, make him look like a conservative. Are you kidding me? You know, and just watching this whole dynamics. And so here we sat. And the Ron Paul organization was probably the most targeted because he was the most dangerous, because he had the largest grassroots, you know, the youth, the military, people sick of the wars, the next generation sick of the Republicans and the Democrats. He had a very powerful movement, and they really, really, really went after him. A lot of these people, you know, that were spreading this stuff disappeared, you know, after the primary. And they just kind of like out of the groups just kind of disappeared. Well, that's because they were all fake. They weren't real members. They were trolls designed to create misinformation and, you know, to tear apart people's structure of belief or confidence. And it's just, it's all marketing. I've been around marketing and organizational development for a good chunk of my adult life. So, you know, it's easy. I think, you know, and I've said this for years. I don't know if I stole it from somebody else, probably did. Nothing's new under the sun. But the difference between motivation and manipulation is what is your motive? And because the techniques are the same. You know, that's and it's really that simple. And so it goes back to something I've said many, many times. You have to know who you are, what you believe in, what's important to you, and what you're willing to do about it. Because you can't change people. And you said it earlier that it was a very key thing. Don't go out there and try to turn a Marxist voter into a conservative. You know, and number one, it ain't going to happen. You're wasting your frickin' time. Help us get the 114 million people that don't vote anymore. That's where your voting base is at. And so it's deciding, you know, you only got so much time in the day, you only got so much energy, and there's only so many key important issues. It is amazing. You can go to groups and argue over shit that means nothing about the future of this country. Yeah, you know, whether it's social issues or gay marriage or pot or whatever, but, you know, our country's falling apart. Our economics is falling apart, and our military is out of control, and our spy system's out of control. And our Washington D.C. is hell. I don't know, you know, for lack of a better term, it's just evil as hell. And so, if you don't get those things right, you don't get the balance of power back. In you know, and Ted has been great on this. There's other things I don't agree with him on, but he's been great on this rule of law issue. And it's important to understand that. He articulates it very well, and Rand does too. You know, and Rand's suing the president. I mean, he gets it. If we don't protect the Bill of Rights, all these other little tertiary issues that are important to you ain't going to mean shit, because you're going to live in communist USSA really soon. Because you basically live in a totalitarian state. They just haven't taken our guns yet. And so they tread softly, but they're moving as fast as they can through every fiber of our society. The EPA, and you look at that, you know, you people who like to study Agenda 21 and freak out and chemtrails and all that stuff. Well, the EPA, there's your mechanism right there. Department of Education, there's your mechanism for destroying the next generation. You know, the attack on religious freedoms. Obamacare, there's your new constitution. I don't think people get this stuff, Rex. You know, the constitution is basically null and void with Obamacare. Obamacare has so much to do with nothing to do with health care. It has to do with everything. All the rules and regs that they can take off of this system, when you take EPA and Department of Education and Environmental Protection Agency and all these organizations, and then you put Obamacare umbrella over the top of them, it's over. You know, people think it's about health care. It ain't about health care. And I don't know if people don't understand. They look around the world and all the hell and all the death and destruction, you know, the Nazi Germany, Soviet Russia, China, Cambodia, all this crap and all these hundreds of millions of people that have been killed, you know, through the atrocities and the violence and the overthrow and the oppression and all those things that we grow up as Americans pointing at, going, that's bad, we're good, that's bad, we're good, that's bad, we good, yeah, boo, yeah, we're Americans. And that'll never happen here. You're kidding yourself if you believe that, because the evil of the world, the people who want to control, the people who are the sycophants, the psychopaths, the ones with no conscience for the things that you care about, you know, that human content, that civil society, that moral thing that holds you back from, you know, punching somebody in the face when they say something off color, you know, out of key, you know, or pulling a gun and shooting somebody, you know, that civil society, they don't have it. And they're in control of your government. And they make decisions every day. What do we got? We got Congress at, what, 10, 12%? Presidents at 38, which I think is a lie. It's probably more like 32, you know, because you got to look at who the polling companies are and the way they ask questions, you know, and then you look at media and that whole mechanism. I mean, have you seen investigative journalism in the last 10, 15, 20 years? I haven't. It's just a marketing machine. And so here we are at this point in history, and it's a great point in time because a lot's going on, and a lot more than the average American even understands. You know, everybody's got their nose up, you know, the Ukraine's butt right now, and most people don't know the history. They don't know the relationship. They don't even understand that, you know, most of the whole Russian culture started out of Kiev. They just don't get it. You know, they just say it's my side versus their side. It's the Super Bowl. It's yeah, rah, rah, rah. They don't even freaking take the time to do the research and understand what's really going on or who Crimea is and the history behind it and that whole region. They don't get it. You know, they don't even know what the hell NATO stands for. They probably think it's a cookie or some shit like that. And yet they have an opinion. And that's the scary part, you know, because uneducated excitement is dangerous. And these people who control our government and our marketing and our news, marketing news, same thing, my opinion, are manipulating your brain while you're focused on crap over there. They're spying on you 24/7 and nobody's doing anything about it except for a handful of people like Rand. You know, this is important stuff because if you're not free and you do not have a strong economic system, then you will never be free. And we don't have a strong economic system. We don't have a secure border. It's wide freaking open. I don't care what they tell you. It's all lies, and it's all being covered up by the media. Somebody's got some grand scheme plan to either merge us into some insane North American union or destroy us as a country. I don't know which. You know, that's your conspiracy theory. You can go down any rabbit hole you want. But sane people don't leave their borders open and then lie about it. But it sure seems to happen here in the great USS of A, you know? And so while you're focused on Crimea, which you probably never even knew existed, you know, in your lifetime until it was top 24/7 in the news for 2 weeks, you know, most people don't have a clue what's going on in Africa. They don't have a clue what's going on in the Middle East. Iraq, you know, 30, 40, 50 people killed a day, you know, from terrorist violence in a country we invaded over lies. And that's embarrassing to me as an American to even admit that, but it's the truth, you know, and yet somehow we don't even talk about it. It doesn't even get in the news. You know, it's a terrible, scary, freaking world out there, and it's coming to a town near you because we don't control our borders. We fill our prisons full of non-violent offenders, and we let all the violent suckers out. I mean, that's a whole study right there. You want to get kind of freaked out? Study that. You know, as they dump this insane people out, and we keep throwing in non-violent offenders, usually on some stupid little pot charge. You know, and I'm not for pot, as you know, I had my drugs and alcohol 30 freaking years ago or some crazy thing like that. You know, drugs are bad, period. But what we're doing to our culture is destroying it. You know, Rand made that point about, you know, we got guys who got busted for growing some pot plants in college and they still can't vote in our state. And I'm thinking, that's insane. You're creating a permanent criminal class over partying, you know, and then you're letting these I live in Washington State. I have no idea what they do here, because by the time somebody gets, you know, does some violent, insane act and gets in some big shootout with the cops and then they expose his record, you're like, holy shit, at 18 years old they knew this guy was insane. What the hell is he doing out? You know, and so we pervert this whole system, this greatness that America is, and it's falling the hell apart. And it breaks my freaking heart because I love my country, you know. And we need to get people to quit arguing over stupid shit, you know. Whether or not pot should be legal or not, or, you know, decriminalized, great. That's a great conversation. But if you don't have a free country, you ain't going to have the chance to have that conversation, because that's about where we are at right now. And I'm watching this worm turn, and I'm watching the battles going on in our society, and I'm watching what's going on in Washington, D.C., well, or what's not going on. You know, while these frickin' rhinos keep handing the destruction of our country. I mean, do people get it, Rex? We talk about this crap every frickin' week. We have no debt ceiling right now. That guy could between Yellen, you know, the alien Yellen, and the Fed, and we can't sell our bad debt to anybody in the world. They quit buying it. China's not buying it anymore, so the U.S., you know, the Fed's going to have to buy it. Before he's done in 1 year, the Fed balance sheet could be $5-7 trillion, and the U.S. debt could be $20-22 trillion. We have you never hear this crap in the news, not even in Fox News. We have $100 trillion of unfunded liability. That's $100 trillion of money that's going to be due, and we can't even pay our frickin' veterans what they're worth. It's insane, and people need to wake up and get focused on the important things, or it's over. I mean, I don't know what else to say.
You said a lot right there. All right,
I did.
You tore it up. Tore it up, folks. And if you want to hear more from Trog, just join us Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Lines will be open in the second hour, and you can talk to Trog directly. Very exciting. So make sure you tune in and make sure you tell everybody about the show. You know, Rand Paul said we need a rebellion against the status quo up in here. And I believe it was Benjamin Franklin who said, rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. See, rebellion is one of those strange words. You know, I consider myself a rebel just because I happen to geographically live in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and we rebelled against the northern aggression of Abraham Lincoln. The question about being a rebel is, what are you rebelling against?
But more importantly, what are you for that caused you to rebel? See, rebellion for the sake of rebellion is so stupid. That's what the French did in 1789, and they brought the Reign of Terror. Everybody ended up with their heads chopped off. The whole thing collapsed. Fiat paper scheme of the Assignat went crazy. They tried to invade all of Europe. They slaughtered genocide in the Vendée region. And the whole thing collapsed, and then you get Napoleon Bonaparte. That didn't work out so good. That's just sheer stupidity. But prior to 1789, we had a rebellion here in 1776. But we were rebelling against a tyrannical crown and a corporate, well, at the time it was mercantilist, but same principles as corporatism, parliament across the Atlantic Ocean. We were rebelling to reclaim that which was good and ordered and our right by inheritance. Through 2,500 years of the development of Western civilization, most of it when it was Christendom, the British common law going back to Runnymede and the Magna Carta. So when Rand Paul tells you that we need a rebellion against the status quo, he's not talking about some kind of crazy hippie revolution. He's not talking about some kind of upheaval of our culture. He's talking about rebelling against the political order, the political class, and the banking class that have perverted our system of governance and have ruined our good name across the whole world and amongst each other. But the thing is that things seem dark, and Chris and I have pointed out a lot of really frightening things, and you know what? That's called realism, because the shit is ugly. We are in debt. The dollar is practically worthless. Our culture is corrupt. Our politics is tyrannical. Our foreign policy is chaotic. I mean, the situation sucks. Now, you can pretend it's all sunshine and roses, but that's not real. And you can pretend that it's unfixable. Well, that's not real either, because it is fixable. But you got to do the work. The fundamental issue that you're fighting against here is a social order. It's called socialism. You think we always talk about socialism in economic terms because it always involves a command economy of some nature. But you know, thinking about things in merely economic terms is really kind of unimaginative and very limited. Economics is important. We talk about it a lot. But we're talking here about the social order because remember something, economics is merely one aspect of our society. The economy is built to serve man, not man serve the economy. And socialism, and I'm going to read from Blessed John Paul II's 1991 encyclical. I mean, I remember when that thing was written, and now it's a long time ago. Some of you might not even have been alive. 1991. How far have we fallen? What he wrote, and this is in Centesimus Annus, he said, "The fundamental error of socialism is anthropological in nature. Socialism considers the individual person simply as an element, a molecule within the social organism, so that the good of the individual is completely subordinated to the functioning of the socioeconomic mechanism. Socialism likewise maintains that the good of the individual can be realized without reference to his free choice, to the unique and exclusive responsibility which he exercises in the face of good or evil. Man is thus reduced to a series of social relationships, and the concept of the person as the autonomous subject of moral decision disappears, the very subject whose decisions build the social order." See, socialism wipes out your free choice. They make it look like you have a choice. You can choose to have chicken or meat. Both of them are rotten and both of them suck. You can choose to have an elephant or you can choose to have a jackass. Both of them will ruin your life. It gives you this false sense of choice, but there is no choice really, because socialism has reduced your dignity as a human being to be nothing more than a servant to the whole. You know, you are now either serving usefully the society, or you are serving the government, or you are serving the economy, and as long as you are serving in a capacity that they like, then you are permitted to continue to be a slave. But as soon as you stop serving in a capacity that they enjoy, or you become useless, then you have to be eliminated. That's the fundamental problem with socialism, and that's exactly what we're seeing here. And in fact, we're seeing kind of a socialism in our politics. As long as you are willing to pretend you're a conservative to woo the rubes in America, especially red state America, to vote for you, but when you get in there, you do as we tell you to do. Vote for the big pork spending bills that we tell you to do. Vote for the wars we tell you to vote for. Vote for more imperial power to the president when we tell you to vote for it. Vote for eliminating the debt ceiling when we tell you to vote for it. You're fine. But if you actually exercise your choice, your individual judgment, if you actually put the interests that your constituents elected you to put forward first, before party, before government, before Washington, then we have to destroy you. That's exactly what's going on. That's why you get someone like Mitch McConnell, that friggin' worthless piece of shit that pretends that he's the leader of the Senate Republicans, that he talks about the Tea Party in this sense. I think we're going to crush them everywhere. I don't think they're going to have a single nominee anywhere in the country. Can he be more plain? If for no reason than that comment right there, Kentucky, you need to elect Matt Bevin to replace Mitch McConnell. It's just that simple. It really is just that simple, because these people are going to eat their own and they're going to eat you alive. And remember, this is a bleak-looking situation, but understand something, that in the bleakness, communism, the bleakness of the Soviet Union and the bleakness of the gulags and the bleakness of the concentration camps and the Holocaust, there's always a light, there's always hope. You have to be that light and that hope. Upon receiving his Nobel Peace Prize in 1970, Alexander Solzhenitsyn said, "There is one simple step a simple, courageous man can take, not to take part in the lie, not to give his support to false actions. Let this principle, the lies mask the evil, enter the world and even dominate the world, but not through me." Don't be part of the lie that somehow if we elect someone who happens to be a Republican, they'll fix things. That's a lie. Don't be a part of the lie. I would rather say my vote was a principle vote for someone who I believed would do a better job, or my abstention was a principled abstention because you gave me shit choices, than to elect another lying Republican who makes us think they're going to do conservative things, who makes us think they're going to follow the Constitution, who makes us think they're going to give us small government, who makes us think they're going to restrain taxes, who makes us think they're going to cut spending, who makes us think that they're going to give us a secure place in the world without having to invade the whole bloody thing and bomb it, and then does the opposite. I'm not going to be part of that. You shouldn't be part of that either, and that's what you need to convey to the conservative voters out there. Don't be a part of the lie. Be part of the solution. I mean, even Viktor Frankl, who actually was a survivor from the Nazi Holocaust, this is what he said. "We who lived in concentration camps can remember the men who walked through the huts, comforting others, giving away their last piece of bread. They may have been few in number, but they offer sufficient proof that everything can be taken away from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way." That's the beauty of being human. That's the beauty of being free. We get to choose. Stand up today and choose to lock arms and form a phalanx with people like Sarah Palin and Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and Newt Gingrich and even Rick Perry and Rand Paul. Let's bring back the Constitution. Let's bring back the Republic. Let's rebuild our culture. Let's be a free and virtuous people who are emulated around the world for the betterment of mankind rather than feared because we destroy economies, we invade countries, and we decay cultures. That's what the left, that's what the socialists, that's what the rhinos have tried to turn us into, and it is up to us to turn it back. Even though I read this on Thursday, I'm going to read it again. This is Charles Carroll of Carrollton. I believe he was the last one to pass who actually signed the Declaration of Independence, writing in 1766, a whole decade before he signed that document. And don't think he didn't give up too much. This was actually possibly the wealthiest man in the colonies at the time. And he pledged with the others his fortune, his life, and his sacred honor. And he said, "Liberty will maintain her empire till a dissoluteness of morals, luxury, and venality shall have prepared the degenerate sons of some future age to prefer their own mean lucre, the bribes and the smiles of corruption and arbitrary ministers to patriotism, to glory, and to the public weal." He was telling us, just like what Ben Franklin says, which Chris quotes quite a lot, it's a republic if you can keep it. They envisioned that they have handed on a tradition of liberty. They preserved it through two millennia of history, and they delivered it to us more free and ordered than ever, knowing that as we prosper, as we free, as we grow more comfortable, we could very easily lose it if we lose our moorings for what is right and good and true and beautiful. And freedom is beautiful. It is your right given to you by God. And only you can make yourself a slave by sitting back and watching TV and stuffing your face with Cheetos and being concerned about all sorts of materialist crap like the next upgrade to your Android system and your new iPhone and all this shit, when in fact the most important thing is, what did I do today to defend liberty, to advance the conservative cause of liberty, and make sure that not only will my future be brighter, but that I have not taken advantage of future generations by robbing them before they were born and handing them chains after I die. Actually, restore fiscal sanity so their future will be better and more prosperous, and I have bound the men who govern in chains so that our children and their children and their children won't be in chains. That's the choice. That's the beauty. That's what you get to do. And the only way you do it is you listen to the people who are leading on the issue. The people who are really leading, not the ones that are pandering, but the ones that are actually leading. You can tell who they are because of the way that they can speak from the heart, and then they follow it up with action. Will all our actions be successful? No. But that doesn't mean that because we can't win every single battle that we can't win the war. As Newt Gingrich said, you have to think of a long strategy. The man said in 1979 there would be a Republican majority. He didn't get it till 1994. But he worked for it every single day. And that's what you have to do. Ron Paul served for 40 years as a congressman, never intending to be a congressman. He just wanted to get the issue of monetary reform in the Federal Reserve out there. But he served for 40 years. And he started an intellectual revolution among the youth who understand liberty. That's the beauty of tomorrow. That's the beauty of the future. Now, in this period of time before most people in this country celebrate Easter, we kind of walk into the wilderness and take stock of ourselves and take account. Just remember, and whether you're a Christian believer or not, you know, it's like reading Aesop's fables to you, I guess, but there are some really powerful stories in the Bible that have analogies to today. And before he began his ministry, Jesus went into the desert for 40 days and 40 nights to fast. And the devil tempted him. And how did the devil tempt him? I will give you all the kingdoms of this world if you but worship me. That's the same temptation we have. Now, whether you think of it in theological terms or you think of it in practical terms, that could simply mean, if you worship the dollar, I'll give you all the kingdoms of the world. If you worship the rhinos, I'll give you all the kingdoms of the world. But it's a promise that can't be kept. But if you want freedom, which is giving you your own kingdom, your own domain of liberty, then don't worship them, but fight for true liberty, and it's yours. But only if you hold it in your heart, and only if you band together with those who do, and don't become depressed, and don't become dejected, and don't give up, and don't worry about what happens tomorrow. What can you do today? And there's a lot you can do. So get out there and do it. Join us on Thursday, 9 p.m. for Open Lines. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
I don't usually do this, but I want to add something right before the closing line. But, you know, as you were talking, that was beautiful. And what you need to do is take that talk and split it out of your out of the show and make that available, because that you were on a roll there. But one of the things kept hitting me over and over and over in the head as you were talking, was our children. America has always been known for giving the next generation more opportunity, more freedom, more wealth, more lifestyle, you know, this whole progressive thing, progressive in a good term. I need to clarify that. But this is the first time that the generations coming behind us have less opportunity, less lifestyle, less chance for freedom, and less chance for economic prosperity. And if there's anything to fight for, because Americans, you know, our children are important to us, at least I think they are still important to us. Hard to tell sometimes out there in society. But if you give a damn about your kids and your grandkids and your great-grandkids, this fight right here is serious, because we're not giving them more opportunity, more freedom, more chance at a better lifestyle than we had. And that's something that our fathers, my parents' generation, my grandparents' generation, coming out of the Depression, and before that, I can't tell you because I didn't know them. But I knew it in both my grandparents and my parents, in their heart, they wanted us to have more than they had. And now we're sitting back with our face in Fox Noise and American Idol and the Super Bowl and this political game that we're playing with Russia right now, which most people don't understand, but they're rah-rah on their team while our country is falling apart. We are not handing our children a better life. And that's got to change. That mindset right there. If you can't fight for yourself, or you can't fight for, you don't know what you believe in, how about that for a focal point, a candle in the darkness. And with that, a thunder of liberty rumbles on.
I came today to reinforce Governor Rick Perry's speech from yesterday, where Rick said, it's time for a little rebellion on the battlefield of ideas. I want to suggest to you that actually it's time for a big rebellion on the battlefield of ideas, of core values that have made America great, with the capabilities of science and technology, so that we actually, for example, reduce the cost of Medicare in the future because we solve the challenge of Alzheimer's. We reduce the cost of dealing with children with autism because we solve the challenge of autism. There are 1,000 things going on around the country. There are literally hundreds of thousands of pioneers of the future. All of you can go back home, and you'll find people who are developing a better future. And the challenge, the reason it's become so hard, is that we've also grown prison guards of the past. And the prison guards of the past do everything they can to block the development of a better future. So you just saw the mayor of New York do, in closing charter schools in a way that clearly hurts black and Hispanic children, because he represents the teachers union, who are the biggest prison guards of education, stopping children. If we had had the current model of giant bureaucratic government in the 1840s, the Stagecoach Association would have hired a lobbyist to pass a bill that limited railroads to the speed of a horse on the grounds that anything else would be unfair competition. What I'm trying to do is set up a conversation in America among everybody on our side so that by 2016, Hillary Clinton is the leading prison guard of the past, propping up every failed bureaucratic institution in America. If this is a fight between the future and the past, and we truly represent for the average American a better future, and they truly represent for the average American those forces blocking that future, we will win decisively, and we will govern for two generations. And in the process, we will restore a healthy American economy. We will dramatically improve the health system. We will accelerate learning in America to an extraordinary degree. And we will regain our national security on a scale that no other country could compete with. But that requires us to be oriented.
Who are the two Republicans in modern times who have most energized young people? Ronald Reagan and Ron Paul. So apparently the key is being named Ronald. But if you think of it, neither one of them were young, rugged, James Dean, rebel without a cause. They were septuagenarians. And yet what did they do? They stood for principle. They painted a bold, inspiring vision for America, for how all of us can be better. And young people came out by the millions and said, that's the vision I want
to
be.
But not if we try to be all things to all people. There are some in our midst who've suggested that we should broaden our base. Except that what they mean by broadening our base is to blur the image, to make us indistinguishable from the other party. Some have suggested that the 1974 election, the disastrous results, were an indictment of what we stand for. Well, may I suggest that the meaning of the last election will not be found among those who voted. It will be found by polling those who stayed home, the biggest non-voter bloc in our nation's history. And why did they stay home? Well, because they said they couldn't see any difference between the two parties. I think they're basically wrong, but I think this is also an indication of what our answer should be to those who would make us more like the opponents. I am a convert to Republicanism. I spent most of my adult life as a Democrat, and I can testify that when I found I could no longer follow the leadership of the Democratic Party, I became a Republican not because the parties were the same, but precisely because they were different. More than half of those who didn't vote have been polled and say it no longer makes any difference which party wins. Now some have taken another course. There are some among us, and I respect their views, who suggest that that means an end to the Republican Party, that we should form a new third party. May I suggest an alternative to that? Let's have a new first party, a Republican Party raising a banner of bold colors, no pale pastels, a banner instantly recognizable as standing for certain values which will not.
Government, as you all, I am sure, would agree, is out of control, and it's very hard for us to get a handle on it. So let's say we even theoretically, and a miracle happened, and we balanced the budget where we are today. It would be still a disaster because we're spending too much money. But it wouldn't change a whole lot. When a crisis comes, guess what happens? Guess who does the bailing out? The Federal Reserve used $4 billion to pass out without congressional approval, and most people say, oh, well, that's the Federal Reserve's job to do that. No, it is our job to check up and find what the Federal Reserve has done, audit them, and find out who their buddies are that they're taking care of. Creates money out of thin air. They can loan to banks, central banks of the world, to other governments and international financial institutions, and we're not even allowed to know. They resent the fact that when I ask these questions, that they don't have to give us this information. That's why the bill to audit the Fed is the first step to ending the Federal Reserve. The Reserve will end itself because they will destroy the dollar. Since the Fed came into existence since 1913, they've eliminated 98% of the value of the 1913 dollar, and it's continual erosion. They pumped up at first when the crisis hit $1.2 trillion, another $600 billion, and believe me, there is an economic law that says you just can't continue to do this. So Congress has a responsibility. They should cut back, but Congress has a responsibility to protect the value of the currency, and that means that we have the moral and the legal authority to put checks on the Federal Reserve System. You know, there's been a lot of talk about bipartisanship after the election. We need bipartisanship. And, you know, in some ways that might be true, but I'll tell you what I think about it. Yeah. I think, and I believe, that we've had way too much bipartisanship for about 60 years. Yeah. You know, we have bipartisanship on... Bipartisanship on medical care. You say, yeah, you know, the current administration has given us bad new medical care, but what is done on the other administration? We've been involved for a long time.
It's the bipartisanship of the welfare system, the warfare system, the monetary system, the challenge to our civil liberties. It all goes through with support from both parties. So there's way too much bipartisanship. This should be a challenge of the issue of philosophy, good philosophy versus bad philosophy. And when you can agree on something, you should make coalitions with whomever will agree with you and come together. But I'd like to see some bipartisanship, though. What I would like to see is take those big government conservatives who love to spend money and never cut their efforts and their spending, and get the big government liberals where they want to spend and never want to cut, and let them get together and say, you know, it's time, you know, this deficit is good. Let's have a little bit of bipartisanship and cut both.
Imagine with me for a moment. Imagine a time when liberty is again spread from coast to coast. Imagine a time when our great country is again governed by the Constitution. Imagine a time when the White House is once again occupied by a friend of liberty. You may think I'm talking about electing Republicans. I'm not. I'm talking about electing lovers of liberty. It isn't good enough to pick the lesser of two evils. We must elect men and women of principle and conviction and action who will lead us back to greatness. There is a great and tumultuous battle underway for the future, not of the Republican Party, but the future of the entire country. The question is, will we be bold and proclaim our message with passion, or will we be sunshine patriots retreating under adverse fire? Will we be firm in our convictions, or will we cower, defeated, and meekly dilute our message? Will we water down the Bill of Rights?
The establishment will grow more and more hysterical the more powerful Rand Paul and Ted Cruz become, and they will gain strength as it's obvious that they're among the few people willing to raise the right question. And I consistently have been on the side of having the courage that Rand Paul and Ted Cruz have, and I think it's sad to watch the establishment grow hysterical.